sent the following telegram to the candidates for governor of the Republican, Democratic, American, Independent, and Peace and Freedom parties. In the event of your election as governor next Tuesday, I am taking this opportunity to invite you and or your representatives to meet with me and my staff in the governor's office, state capital, Sacramento, at 11 a.m. Thursday, November 7th, to discuss and outline transition plans from the outgoing to the incoming administration. Please contact my executive assistant, Ed Meese. I give the phone number on Wednesday to confirm these arrangements. After my election in 1966, the reason for this is I found no provision in state law for me to use so much as a room and a secretary to deal with the flood of transitional business which suddenly faced me. And this had been true throughout the state's history. We corrected that problem early this year with legislation which received wide bipartisan support and which provides procedures and funds for the governor-elect to set up the framework of his administration. It also provides some funds for the outgoing governor to use for 60 days following the conclusion of his term to complete the affairs of his administration. Regardless of the outcome of Tuesday's election, continuity in state government is in the interest of all the people, and my staff and administration will assist in every way possible to make sure the transition is a smooth one.
Here's on how much those funds are.
Yes, I believe the incoming administration gets $125,000. The outgoing administration gets
$25,000.
Do they have a candidate? I thought there were only four on the ballot. We goofed if we didn't.
Strongly, are you supporting Bill Richardson for the United States Senate?
Well, I'm supporting the entire ticket. I have appeared at a couple of fundraisers for him. I have one more to do. I have done an ad for him.
Senator Cranston the other night hinted that he might even have the tacit endorsement or tacit support of you, or that he didn't think you would mind if he won, and as evidence the fact that some of your strongest supporters are contributing to his campaign.
Well, Senator Cranston is absolutely wrong about whether he has my tacit support or whether I'm sitting back. I think that Senator Cranston is one of the biggest spending senators in the United States Senate. He was a party at the this session of Congress opened. He was one of 11 Democrat senators who between them set a new record in the history of the United States in that the 11 of them proposed spending measures which totaled more than $1 trillion of additional spending for the federal government.
The Illinois people released a poll that showed him catching up with Brown. Do you believe in polls, and does this one encourage you?
Well, I don't think you can ignore polls. We found that there's a they indicate trends. I don't think that they're accurate to the percentage point, but I believe they also show trends of this kind, and evidently there is an upsurge, and I hope it continues and to ensure his victory.
Governor, both Mr. Brown and Mr. Flournoy have generally agreed that there need to be changes in the areas of collective bargaining for public employees and the area of housing and more public members on consumer affairs. These are the things that haven't happened in your administration. Do you take this as any reflection on what you've accomplished and what you haven't done?
No, and I think there are great differences between the two of them on these points. In collective bargaining, Houston Flournoy has indicated that he seeks to find some better way to for redress of grievances and to work out problems between employees and government, and we have been doing the same thing. In the transitional period, if he's the candidate and he finds out all of the changes we've made and all of the programs we've undertaken to bring this about, he will be encouraged by the progress we've made. His opponent, on the other hand, supports collective bargaining that would permit public employees to strike. Hugh Flournoy is opposed to this, and I think this is an issue of this campaign, because any man who would run for public office and endorse the idea of public employees striking, I think, is advocating something that is in contrary to the public interest and to the and is against the good of the people of this state.
How about in the area of housing, Governor? You vetoed that bill, and they also both agree that there should be more public members on the boards in the Consumer Affairs Department. My question is, how does this reflect on your administration?
Well, again, I don't think that they, in the area of the Consumer Affairs Department, I don't think they're aware. of the lead that we have taken and the steps that we've taken in these last few years to do exactly that and to have more public representation. We were well aware that the tendency in any government regulation is for the regulators to need regulating, that the regulators pretty soon begin to represent not the consumer as much as they can, as the regulated industry. And we have taken steps, and we have made great strides in that way. And I think that either one of them, I know that Hugh in his own job has not been privy to all the things that are going on in the administration and in down at the department level. But he will find out that the Consumer Protection Agency in California is truly outstanding in the country. There's no other state has anything like it. And we literally have laid down rules with regard to product quality, consumer safety, that have affected manufacturing for the whole country. We've served a purpose in protecting the whole nation in such things as fireproofing of upholstery fabrics and things of that kind. We have a very strong and a very effective consumer protection agency in California. Now, on the housing thing, regard to the bond issue, here perhaps we have some disagreement. It's very easy to look only at the one thing, the slump in housing, and the fact that there is a slump and housing is not going forward in California. But there's been no determination yet as to whether part of that slump might not be due to overproduction. I know we were warned 2 years ago that we were going to be confronting this because there was a tendency then to overbuild. But the bond issue that had come to our desk and we vetoed was one that would have, I think, endangered the credit rating of the state of California. But it also would have created an autonomous agency that would have had bonding power and the full control, not elected representatives. They were not elected. This autonomous agency would have had the power to spend $500 million and to float more bonds and to do what it chose to do with that money. Now, some other states have fallen into that trap to their sorrow. They've lost their credit rating for doing it, and they have found that they have built monstrous, costly programs. And we're as concerned as anyone else about housing. We have felt for a long time in this administration, however, that the federal government had preempted that field in the field of both subsidizing, with the exception of our veterans program, which is a very successful program.
Does it bother you that even the Republican candidate is talking about changes far beyond what you've accomplished in your administration?
No, because I expect any candidate. Someone's going to be a rubber stamp. Every candidate's got his own views and things and his own priorities, and they're going to vary. I would say that basically, I think you and I have no philosophical quarrel. I might disagree with some trend that he would make. I'm sure that he, in the past, has disagreed with some of mine. On the other hand, I feel in some of these actual particulars that there's been no opportunity for him to find out as, for example, the Consumer Protection Agency, that we are already, he may find that all he needs to do is continue and carry on what we have already started in that regard. I'm not going to say that it's easy. You get resistance from the people that are already there when you start to make changes in government, particularly when you're dealing with the bureaucracy.
Well, I hadn't been citing your record or yourself much he's asked about. He hasn't really praised your administration except when the question's been raised. He seems to regard it somewhat as a burden on the campaign trail. Do you get this impression or not?
No, I haven't gotten that impression at all. In fact, I read some of you writing about one of his appearances on a university campus where he took them on about what our support and aid to education had been, in spite of the fact that this was displeasing to some students who had been well indoctrinated, I'm sure, that we were tearing down the universities and the educational institutions, and he pointed out that was not true. No, I haven't felt that, but I believe that any candidate, he knows in a situation of this kind that he, being a member of this administration, is going to have his opponents attack him on the basis perhaps of being a carbon copy or a rubber stamp, and he has to, in the campaign, establish his own identity and that he is his own man, and I favor his doing that.
I agree with Jerry Brown in that formerly is recycled Reaganism.
No, as a matter of fact, Brown on almost anything, and certainly not in the lies, distortions, and misstatements of fact that have characterized his advertisements. I know he's been running against me, and I find that his ads are pretty disgraceful in the things that they're inaccuracies, and as I say, they're outright falsehoods.
Governor.
What? Well, here is the ad about how much the governor of California is paid, and he makes it sound as if he lives at a Rockefeller level. Mm-hmm. And then he says, and he grew up, of course, living on that same pay scale, or his family and all the emoluments that go with the office. But then he says, it comes out with the fact that Hugh Flournoy wants a 20% raise for the governor. Now, Hugh Flournoy specifically, when a proposal was made in the legislature that did not come from the executive branch, that there should be an increase in pay for constitutional officers, Hugh Flournoy specifically agreed with that program, except that the governor's office should be exempt and not get an increase in pay. And that's one. If you want some others.
The governor's mansion, Governor. Jerry Brown says he won't live in the mansion. You think it's prudent to go ahead with that?
Yes, because I think it's being built for governors for 100 years to come. And it has been a need for 40 years. Now, here again, I think there are some of his inaccuracies. He charges that the mansion is a Taj Mahal that's going to contain sauna baths and wine cellars and so forth. There's nothing of that kind in it. Now, he grew up in a house in which there was a wine cellar, and a house that was 4,000 square feet bigger than the one that's being built, and that was provided to the people of California. This is another one of his inaccuracies, and I think the residents should go ahead, and if he chooses not to live in it, well, fine. It'll be just nice, brand new, and spanking then if he should be the governor for the next governor that comes along. But I'm hopeful that he doesn't have to make that decision.
What do you think would be a good outcome? Republicans could hope for, and what would be maybe the worst they could see, both in the state and there?
Well, I'd like to see the governors win the constitutional offices. I would like to see them improve their position in both the Assembly and the Senate. I know that we can't achieve a majority in those houses. I think we can come so close in the Senate that we do have a checking power and certainly an upholding of a veto power that we've had in these last several years, and that veto power has save the people of California over $16 billion. I would like to see that. I know that at the national level, in the off-year elections, the party occupying the White House traditionally loses about 20 seats, so I would like to see the Republicans do better than that and lessen the majority and certainly keep Mr. Meany from getting his veto-proof Congress.
Grand Rapids, Michigan, his own hometown, had a great deal of mixed emotions about what he could or couldn't do for the party.
Well, he's coming to California for a fundraiser, and there's no question but that the Republicans have not been able to match the excessive contributions that our Democratic opponents have had. And we don't have any candidates who are getting $500,000 from two contributors. So he's speaking at a fundraising dinner, and tickets have been sold on that basis, and there's some pretty practical good that's been done already. It means that our candidates will be able to continue down to the wire. We've never been able to match our opponents in the flood of advertising they have. For example, Bill Bagley's opponent has just signed up for an additional $150,000 in radio and TV ads, which means that when the campaign is over, and the accounting must then be made after the election. We're evidently going to find that someone has chunked a big sum of money into his opponent, which Bill can't match.
Does the president have to come in? You're the governor. You've been popular. Isn't it enough for you to just stand up for these candidates in California?
Well, I've been standing up for them. But also, there's a little thing in show business that, how often are the people going to pay money to see reruns? I have been
yourself in that instance.
Well, I I have done two statewide very successful fundraisers in this campaign. I have done a number of smaller fundraisers for individual candidates for the Assembly and the Senate, for the Assembly and Senate caucus, for one each for at least for all of our candidates in the constitutional offices in the Senate. And there comes a point in which you're going to have another fundraiser, you bring in outside talent, just as I myself have been outside talent in other states to the extent that I could leave the state.
Any reflection of how difficult the election is going to be for Republicans? You need the president to come in?
No, I think he's been campaigning extensively. I think this is in a pattern. And again, I'm not going to deny the fact that in the follow-up of the last 2 years, there is a great apathy, and affecting both parties. But for us, it's worse because we're a minority party. We can't afford to have our people stay home. And all of us are doing our utmost to convince the Republicans to get out and go to the polls.
Would you get an amplifying statement you reportedly made yesterday that the Lynch mob should be satisfied with the Nixon's point of view?
No. I made a remark that was overheard by a member of the press privately to someone else. And what I actually said and said for public dissemination, I repeat. I was asked my comment regarding the health condition of the former president, and I said I intended to pray for him. That I've been doing, and I intend to continue.
I think the president's critical illness will generate or elicit a sympathy response to Republicans in California Tuesday.
I have no way of knowing. I haven't even thought of this in connection with anything to do with the election. I just hope and pray for his family that he is shortly recovered from this.
In any of your funds or your accounts from fundraising over the years, and if so, what are you going to do with
it? I don't think so. If you're talking about the fund through the State Central Committee that has paid the expenses for my campaigning so that the taxpayers don't have to pay for it. If there's anything left, it'll just simply revert to the State Central Committee. Through their hands.
Clarify, well, where you stand on possibly leading a third party. Could you say, possibly, is it a possibility or is it not a possibility for you in 76? Give us a yes or no.
Ladies and gentlemen, you had me in that hypothetical discussion here a couple of weeks ago, and I thought that I was impervious to surprise anymore, but I must confess to being quite surprised at the positiveness of your stories about what I thought was nothing more than hypothetical speculation on the general subject, and I have thus learned my lesson, and I'm not going to join in any more such hypothetical discussions. I am going to do my utmost for the Republican Party and to convince as many people as I can that this party and what it stands for is more in line with the hopes and dreams and aspirations of the people of the United States than the leadership of the Democratic Party, and that has been proven by an actual study.
Talk of the third party, Governor, seems to be coming from Republicans in other parts of the country, and they've been telling political columnists and newsletter people about this. Do you think it's wrong for them to speak out on a third party then? That's
no,
where it comes from.
No, but then
from.
If you want to ask them about that, you're going to ask them about that.
Governor, you, as stumping around the country, you mentioned that you find a great deal of apathy in both parties, and perhaps this is part of the problem of the Republican Party. Wouldn't you term it more shame and disgrace for the Republicans, particularly across the country?
No, although there's a story in the Wall Street Journal this morning about a man who has said that the outcome of the election, if there is one, certainly will not be a mandate for any form of government, that it will be punitive, that there will be people who think that they're somehow being punitive about the whole recent affair by simply staying home and not voting. I think those people haven't given it serious thought, and they don't realize that you don't cure a problem by sitting on the sidelines. You get in and participate. Government by the people is going to work at all. I think the concern of everyone in both parties is an extremely low turnout, and a lot of people just ignoring it. I myself believe that there's probably less of a shame element or anything of that kind in it than there is just an emotional exhaustion. An election year, I've described before, is sort of like coming up to the big game. And people have to get emotionally aroused. It is not an intellectual exercise purely. People get whipped up to supportive candidates, and they want to go out and work for them and their cause and sort of a team spirit thing. And I think the last 2 years, and if I put this in show business parlance, why, I just have to do it. I think that we have emotionally exhausted it. We have hammered and hammered and hammered on a political theme that has dominated the news for virtually 2 years, and the people, just great numbers of them, just cannot bring themselves up to getting excited about more political activity. And this, I think, is the greatest danger and the greatest thing that's come out of the whole Watergate obsession. What?
It's the Republicans' problem.
Well, I don't think it's the Republicans' problem. I think it's a national problem.
I don't know. You said hammering, hammering, hammering. Are you talking about the media?
Well, certainly I think there has been an obsession with that that might be out of proportion to its actual news value in a world that is on the brink of war half the time and has even had wars during this particular period and has had this country participate in settling and stopping wars. Then maybe there's been an overbalance.
To return to President Ford's visit, Flournoy has said that the visit he thinks will do more good in terms of fundraising than it will do in terms of persuading anybody. And the implication being that the president's power of persuasion or credibility with the voters is not that high, he thinks, in California. He doesn't think that anything the president thinks can convince him.
Well, there's a Gallup poll that just shows the president's rating, job rating has gone up in the people's minds. No, if I could guess, and I, it's presumptuous of me to try and interpret through the third party what is supposed to be his view, and he's the one you should ask, but I think that probably he was saying what I said before. You realize that when someone comes and speaks at a fundraiser, where the purpose of the meeting is to gather people to fund the campaign so you, the candidate, can get to the voters, that's a little different than coming in to mass rallies in which the visitor, the speaker, is there aimed at winning votes. And in this particular instance, the choice has been made. The president is coming to help secure campaign funds. I don't know. As I say, the polls indicate a majority of the people support or give him a favorable rating on the job he's doing. And how much an office holder of any kind, be he president or governor or whatever, can do in transferring people's allegiances to vote for someone else, I think it's been proven too many times that you can't do that. That you can't transfer your support, for example, to someone else. You can do two things. You can help them get the means of attracting a crowd for them to convince the people of their candidacy. You can help them raise money. And you can discuss the issues. And in a campaign such as this one, where the one candidate has been so thoroughly dishonest, you can hopefully reveal to people his dishonesties and the claims that he has made. I happen to have here the scripts for the various ads that have been on because I've been so concerned about it. I'm concerned about candidate Brown's ad, for example, where he talks about how he has proven with the efficiencies in his office as Secretary of State and his economies that he's equipped to run the state. Well, here is a state government in which we have held the number of state employees virtually even for 8 years. But he, in the last 4 years, has added 58%. That's a 14% a year increase in the number of employees and a 121% increase in his budget over a four-year period. And you can go down through all of his ads, including the one where the man is claiming that he has the endorsement of the police forces in this state because he's a law and order candidate. And he is not a law and order candidate. And right now in Los Angeles, policemen are signing petitions by the hundreds demanding the recall of their official, or their organization's official, who is on the air with that ad because the membership was never polled. The rank-and-file law enforcement do not feel that he is a law and order candidate. They do not support views that are contrary to capital punishment, that would legalize marijuana, that would do some of the other things that he intends to do. So this, anyone can be helpful in campaigning, is to reveal those falsehoods.
Governor, what do you think of the propriety of the generous gifts Mr. Rockefeller gave employees and friends?
Well, now that's going to be determined by the Congress, and I'm sure that they will find out whatever purposes were served as to whether there's nothing more than generosity involved or where that might reflect on someone holding public office. And I feel it's like in a trial. I'm not going to comment while it's before those committees.
About the propriety rather than the legality of it, do you think it's proper to do something?
Well, you can give a gift if you've got it to anyone as long as you pay the gift tax on it. And apparently he paid the gift tax on it.
Did you condone it?
Now, you ask questions, and then when my answers displease you, you attempt to pronounce an answer, which you will then pick up your pen and write down in your notebook there. I didn't say that. I said that decision will be made by the congressional committees, and we will be bound by their decisions. And while it's before those committees, I'm not going to comment.
Governor, you recently, the Supreme Court of the United States has agreed to hear another case concerning banning capital punishment once and for all. It had a 72 landmark decision, which has put some pretty tight restrictions on it. How do you feel about the possibility of completely?
Well, I hope they don't. I happen to be one who believes, and I might say sadly, I'm sorry. I remember writing a term paper opposing capital punishment myself at one stage of my education. And I have sadly come to believe that capital punishment is necessary. It is a deterrent. And I hope that the Supreme Court does not make a decision. They made one that I believe this state has complied with, that you must have specific crimes for that punishment, that there must be equal with regard to those who commit those crimes, equal justice. And we've met that with legislation. And I hope that's upheld.
Allen Post recently came out with his final fiscal report on the current fiscal year showing that your final last budget is up to $10.4 billion. Which is $900 million above a year ago. And that's pretty much the biggest increase in any year that hasn't had a tax increase. How does that jive with your cut, squeeze, and trim and your original budget, which is like $9.8 billion?
Well, I can tell you one of the reasons it jives is because here again, such as back in 1970, 71, when we had the economic dislocation that was called a recession, we've had some problems. There are some built-in factors of cost of living increases in some of our welfare programs that, in spite of the great success, have added a couple of $100 million of unexpected costs that were not anticipated, but that's due purely to the runaway inflation that we have. We still are on cut, squeeze, and trim, and we still are going to leave the incoming governor a balanced budget. But there is a period in inflation in which, for a time, government enjoys a benefit. Government begins to get the benefits from the increased prices and the increased salaries to meet inflation through the sales and the income tax. But then government's costs go up, and suddenly you begin to get caught with the increased outgo. And in this year, we have also had the economic dislocation that has accompanied this inflation. The increase in unemployment insurance because of the increase in employment, the increase in, as I've said, in these welfare programs. But no, we're still well within the bounds. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be the continued struggle to try to maintain a balanced budget. That means there's no slack in there in the coming year. But I think we've been successful with that program. This.
Know if that $10.4 billion would have fit within the ceiling in your Prop 1 that failed?
I think it would, yes.
At the time we figured it, when the budget came down in June, so I have not completely figured it since then.
And if it didn't, this would come under the very provision that was in Proposition 1, that a natural disaster or an economic strain was provided for on a temporary basis. But I think it still would come within, because we were well within it earlier, before these last figures hit us about these additional costs.
Governor, did you say there was some sort of study which showed the Republicans superior to the Democrats?
Well, now, I'm glad you asked that. I hope that I'll see you all reach for your pencils and start writing, making notes. I've come by the exercise that you do physically with your writing arms, I've come to know what I can expect to see as the outcome of these press conferences here. So why don't you just doodle anyway when I'm talking? It makes me feel better. I'll think you're busy. Yes, there was a scholastic study made in the East of the 1972 election and the philosophical differences. They took several of the key issues that are the issues still confronting us in the country. And they have done a survey of the rank-and-file membership of the Democratic Party and what their views were on how to solve or resolve those problems. They then did a similar study of the delegates to the two national conventions and found that the delegates to the Republican National Convention, in almost identical percentage points, were in agreement with the rank-and-file membership of the Democratic Party as to how to solve the problems. By contrast, the delegates to the Democratic National Convention were at the opposite end of the poll from the rank-and-file membership of their party, which probably explains why millions of Democrats crossed the party line.